me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.
Hey, now if you're not smiling now, I can't help you. I really can't. That's always puts a smile on my face. It's of course Mark and Wise, and we're going to be talking about Mark and Wise now with Louis Barth. Good afternoon, Louis. How are you?
Hello, Dave. Hi.
Great to have you on. And yeah, this is a great book, and just for me, my comedy heroes. Why write the book and why now, Louis?
Well, I've got to be honest. My publisher said. We'd like a Morecambe and Wise book. And I said, I mean, haven't there been loads and loads of books about Morecambe and Wise? And they went, well, we'd like to see how you do it.
Yeah.
Because I have a particular approach, which is, you know, quite nerdy and quite anoracky. And also I tend to find, you know, go and interview the third cameraman from the left, stuff like that. So, And that was great. I did actually speak to a great cameraman called Stuart Lindley, who was, you know, telling me about, you know, in rehearsals, you know, they, you know, he'd suggest things and Eric would say, oh, yeah, we can use that. Just, yeah. So, and also I thought, well, you know, as much as has been said and done, there's always something that can be added.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd read previous books about Morecambe Wise, all of which are fantastic books. And I thought, you know, basically it's the book I'd want to read myself. And I said, you know, I want to know more about Janet Webb. I want to know more about Arthur Tolcher. So I sort of bring in these side characters. Cause I think the Janet Webb thing's fascinating and interesting because she, you know, the joke was, who is this woman? Why is she claiming the credit for the end of the show? And then of course they had to sort of, you know, stop using her because she became famous. So the joke had gone. She was no longer who's this. It's Janet Webb coming on at the end. And but what was interesting about Janet Webb was, and I think it's a measure of Morecambe and Wise's outlook and kindness, they never sent her up and made her a figure of fun. They celebrated this glamorous buxom woman coming on at the end. And I found a Liverpool Echo article saying that she'd become a role model for the bigger girl, and the thing is, Morecambe and Wise, the great thing about them was they used to do this knocking people and taking the mick, but they do it in incredibly warm ways.
So I was thinking Des O'Connor because with Janet, of course, because they never do it sarcastically or anything. It's very kind of there's a warm feeling about it. Even with Des. Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing an interview with Des and Eric together, and just there was real friendship and warmth there.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Eric would make jokes in interviews with Des, like he came to my daughter's wedding. He wasn't invited, but he was there. And, you know, they were very good friends. And, you know, like so many things, it wouldn't have been funny if Des was a bad singer.
Exactly.
Des hadn't been fun. You know, if they'd genuinely been zeroing in on something and taking the mick out of it and being cruel, that wouldn't have been funny. It wouldn't have been them. And I think a lot of people latched onto it and gave Des a hard time. And he said, no, look, they're doing it in a certain way.
I suppose Des couldn't buy that publicity as well.
Des was a lovely and very, very smart guy.
Yeah.
Very easygoing. And he knew that... it was good for his name. And the thing is, you know, it was a passing reference in the 1972 Christmas show where it all started. And that was one of the few that wasn't written by Eddie Braben. It was a joke written by Barry Cryer and John Junkin.
Yeah, oh, Barry, about, yeah. Brilliant.
In a sketch, just a passing reference. I've got some good news, sir. It's a sketch. I think it was a sketch with Pete Murray. RAF aces from the First World War. I have some good news, sir. What is it? Has Des O'Connor lost his voice? And that got such a laugh. And then they developed it further and carried on with it. You know, if you want to be a goner, buy me an LP by Des O'Connor.
Yeah.
And then there's that beautiful sketch where they're coating him off. And then he walks on behind them and Eric clocks him and Ernie's going, that Des O'Connor, he's useless. And then suddenly Eric goes, I like him.
Yeah. I think it works because they send themselves up a lot. The that British self-deprecation that happens, you know. And I was thinking, of course, you know, the they're all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order. Yeah. You know, that's taking a mickey out of that was Eric taking a mickey out of himself, really.
Oh yeah. But also in that sketch, you have Ernie as the mediator, and he's so supportive of his friend. Is that okay? Basically, that was a musical version of Ernie's plays. The plays were terrible.
Yeah.
He couldn't write plays for Toffee, and that was the joke. Eric couldn't play the piano, but each one supported the other one. That just relentlessly. Is that okay, Mr. Preview? And you know, Ernie read out a line from the play, and you know, it would get a big laugh because it was shockingly bad. And there you go. Let's knock out that.
Yeah.
But I think the great thing about Eric and Ernie and their knocking jokes, they always did it to people who were big. They always punched upwards. They never went for someone who couldn't take it. So they went for the big names, you know, Dame Flora Robson and, you know.
And that's it. I think they know because, I mean, like you say, Des O'Connor could sing. They'd gone for somebody who was overtly poor at singing. Yeah. The fun wouldn't have been there. On this show, we've interviewed Gary Morecambe before when he had a book out. I interviewed Angela Rippon many years ago as well. And both of them talked lovingly about Eric and Ernie, of course. But from Gary's point of view, I was always under the impression that, you know, Eric was pretty depressive at home, like, you know, Peter Sellers type. But apparently he was such a great dad as well. And Gary had nothing but nice things to say about his dad. It was great to hear.
Eric was, I think the only thing with Eric was that he was a terrible worrier.
Yeah.
And you know, he would get really, really worried about stuff. But no, see, the thing is, I'm very, very wary of all this cliche about comedians. Yeah. They have a dark side. And years and years ago, there was a TV
documentary.
Don't we all? Well, to a lesser degree, but years and years ago, there was a TV documentary about Les Dawson, who I also written a book on. Barry Cryer was interviewed for this documentary. He said, they didn't use this bit. They didn't, funny that they didn't use this bit. They said, did Barry Cryer, Les Dawson have a dark side that nobody saw? And Barry replied, well, if he had, I never saw it.
Yeah. Simple, yeah.
Such a stupid question.
Yeah.
Did you have a dark side nobody saw? Well, and, you know.
We all have our moments. I mean, I wonder whether with Eric, whether kind of that insecurity maybe drove him to, you know, did they feel the pressure to, obviously with it being such a big Christmas show and the Queen watching it each year, I'd had to kind of top the year before maybe. Maybe there was that insecurity, we got to stay at the top, and that maybe kept them there, really.
I wouldn't call it insecurity. I would call it that need to top previous year's achievement. It wasn't insecurity. It was from a base of absolute security.
Yeah.
And I think that towards the end, they knew, and they got to the point, they were comfortable enough. They said, well, actually, we're repeating ourselves, and we don't need to do this every year. We don't put ourselves through this every year. So I think they realized that they'd done a lot of great work, and they didn't need to, because Eric, you know, sometimes, you know, Ernest Maxin, the producer, he said, you know, sometimes when in rehearsal, Eric's lips would go blue with worry because this isn't working, it's not going to work. And Ernest would say, no, look, trust me, it's going to work. He said, no, it's not working, it's not working. And of course, you know, the famous one is the newsreaders doing the tumbling from South Pacific. He said, no, this editing business where you bring the acrobats in, it's not going to work. People are going to see it. And Ernest said, look, go and get a cup of tea. Come back in an hour and I'll show you it when we've edited it. And if it doesn't work, we don't use it. Okay?
Right.
And he went away, had his cup of tea, came back, blue lips. They showed him it. And he grabbed hold of Ernest, grabbed him in a hug and said, bloody hellfire, it works. Yeah.
Brilliant. And I think the key to it, and you know, we can look and dive into the kind of the psychology behind it all, but the simplicity is that we watch it today, okay, and it still makes us laugh, you know?
Yeah. And I think what I think is interesting is that we only ever see the Christmas shows.
Yeah.
We don't see the series in between. I think they've become a Christmas event.
And I was going to say about the fact that many, when we think of Morecambe and Wise, we think of the 70s, you know, maybe late 60s, 70s in BBC era, and we forget about the decades of comedy that they were doing before that as well.
Yeah. I mean, they started on the variety halls. And they started when they were teenagers with Jack Hill. And then they formed a double act because they used to, when they were touring as teenagers, poor Eric's mum, Sadie, used to travel with them. And, you know, in these long train journeys, they'd be making each other laugh and cracking jokes at the other. And she said, why don't you just try and work this into an act, make some kind of use out of it rather than just chattering about it. And that was how the double act began. And then they did the variety stuff. It was a hard time because they were trying to get established, re-established. They'd been stars before the war and during the war. They were in Strike a New Note at the Prince of Wales Theatre with Sid Field and all that. And then after the war, they had to get going again. And it took a long time. And then they did that TV series, Running Wild, in 54 with the infamous review television, the box in which they buried Morecambe and Wise. And it took them a long time to recover from that. And then they hit this stride at ATV in the 60s. And actually, the Grieg Piano Concerto sketch, the André Previn sketch, is in the ATV shows, except there's no André Previn. The conductor is Ernie. Yeah. And Eric's the pianist, and it's much more of a row between them. Whereas when they did it at the BBC, Eddie Braben rewrote it and made the row between Eric and André Previn, who actually loved them.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was given during the show, during writing the book, was an audio recording of the studio recording of the André Previn sketch, including Barry Cryer's warm-up and everything, and they're getting ready for it. And then afterwards, when the sketch is finished, they're waiting for a clear from videotape. And Ernie says something like, "Oh, the poor orchestra, they're so tired. They've had a lot to do. They've sat there for 20 minutes doing nothing."
I wonder whether the comedy, you know, because this doesn't happen for every comedian, but it kind of went across class, it went across boundaries. You know, you'd have the Queen enjoying it as well as your working class people enjoying it as well. And not all comedians manage that.
No, I think it was hugely universal. I think to a certain degree, I think coming from Lancashire and Yorkshire, I think their northern roots gave them a certain classlessness.
Yeah.
And Eric always said they had a little bit of success in America. They never broke it completely, but they were semi-regular on the Ed Sullivan Show at one point. And sorry, I'm going to cough.
That's okay.
Right.
And
Eric said in America, I think we had an advantage because we weren't talking like that. Our northern accents were slightly more American.
Yeah, interesting. Before we close, because we've quickly running out of time, I could just be chatting about Morecambe Wise all afternoon, basically, with you, Louis. I think the greatest comedy duo ever. I suppose the two Ronnies are up there, you know, as a great. Yeah. What's your thoughts?
Well, the two Ronnies are wonderful.
Yeah,
but they weren't a double act. They were two comedians, comic actors, who were put together, and the shows were brilliant. I think if you're going to say best double act, it's got to be more.
Yeah, absolutely. You won't get any arguments from me. Yeah, and I love the two Ronnies as well, but you won't get any arguments from me.
But if you look at the two Ronnies, so much of what they did was Ronnie B doing a bit.
Yeah.
C doing a bit, and then with Morecambe and Wise, they were on together.
Yeah, they're absolutely the. Well, we are out of time, Libby, but thank you for joining us. The book's called Sunshine and Laughter, The Story of Morecambe and Wise, and it's available on our website, tre.radio. Libby, thank you very much, and keep enjoying the comedy.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.